I don't know what papers you read or news programmes that you watch or listen to, but the more I read and listen to, the more I realise that the world is a pretty difficult place to navigate through. As part of the news coverage this week, covering the debate around triggering Article 50 and Brexit, the Brexit Secretary, David Davis, was reported as saying that there's a creeping sense that politicians say one thing and do another. Well, they obviously weren't here, or they should have been here this morning, as we use that triplet of phrases of the say it, mean it, do it, as a way to show people that we are a people that can be trusted. Brexit aside, there's also been further updates about the doping at more than just the recent Olympics in 2016 and the corruption in FIFA. And thinking about the last 12 months, there's been the newspaper phone hacking as well as the Volkswagen emissions scandal. All these are a far cry from the advert for Solvite wallpaper paste. And we looked at that, didn't we, in Reaching Wider. For those of you that maybe aren't familiar with that advert, it features some overalls being pasted to a board with Solvite, and then a 12-stone man getting inside the overalls and him being hoisted and carried away by helicopter. And this was all in an effort to demonstrate the strength of the paste and that the strength could be trusted. But in the course of almost 40 years, society has gone from believing and trusting what they read and saw in the media and in the lives of public people, to now having a deep sense of mistrust and unbelief. So is it any wonder that life is such a challenge? Immigration control in the US announced over recent weeks, President Trump's foreseen policies and the ongoing debate and discussion around the future of the UK is both unsettling and worrying for many. And I find myself asking this question: how can I live my life in these times in a way that engages with these and the many other issues, both now and in the future, that could bring some sense out of the current and likely future chaos? Maybe as we've all been seeing these events, we feel similar to that. We wonder, is there any way out? Is there another way, particularly as followers of Jesus? Followers who maybe we've been following him all our life, or followers who have followed him for less than that, or followers who haven't quite made up our minds whether we want to do that. Well, the good news for us all this morning is that there is another way. And the passage of scripture we had dramatised this morning provides some helpful answers. But before we get into the passage proper, let's just set the scene a little of what's been going on here. So a couple of weeks ago, we were introduced to the start of what Ian referred to as the Jesus preaching healing tour of Galilee, proclaiming the good news of the kingdom of heaven. We saw how Jesus drew the crowd to a mountain where he shared with them who this kingdom was for. We were introduced to a number of characters who were likely to have been there: Reuben, Rebecca, Simona, and Joseph, all with their challenges and all welcome to enter into the kingdom Jesus was proclaiming. This kingdom centred on Jesus, and last week we explored who this Jesus is by examining two images of salt and light. When we choose to believe in Jesus, we invite that salt and light to live within our hearts, so that we can spread that salt or shine that light, as we were thinking about in Reaching Wider as well, so that we are able to navigate through those difficult times. This is what we're called to be, people that are salt and light and the light of Jesus in this world. Okay, you may be thinking, yep. But how, in this challenging world that we live in, are we supposed to do that? What does this life in the kingdom, the one that Jesus proclaims, look like? Well, this is where the passage today on page 969 helps us. And we can take comfort that the crowd who had followed Jesus and was listening to his teaching on the mountain faced similar challenges to the ones we're facing at the moment. At this time, it was a time where Romans insulted Jews, Samaritans attacked Jews, Jews fought back, and different Jewish parties would insult and attack each other. Sound familiar? Here in verses 21 to 37, the writer of Matthew's Gospel presents four sayings that appear to suggest the opposites to the accepted teachings of the law that the Jews were expected to live by. Four times we hear Jesus say either, "You have heard it said," so that's in verses 21, 27 and 33, or "It has been said," in verse 31. And four times we hear his response, "But I tell you." When Jesus was saying, "But I tell you," this was not him saying, "Forget what you've been told previously. Forget what was revealed by God to Moses. Moses, who led the Jews out of slavery by unleashing the 10 plagues against Egypt, guided the freed slaves for 40 years in the wilderness, carried down the law from Mount Sinai, and prepared the Jews to enter the land of Canaan." Instead, Jesus is demonstrating how the Old Testament law is to be properly interpreted and applied. That's how the law and the prophets are being fulfilled, something that he speaks about in the reading we had from last week in verse 17, where he says, "I have not come to abolish the law, but to fulfill it." In other words, showing that "but I tell yous" are equivalent to Scripture itself. These sayings have their roots in what we've come to know as the Ten Commandments and centre on the 3rd, 6th, 7th and 10th Commandments, as well as the Mosaic pronouncement on divorce in Deuteronomy 24 that he later refers to in Matthew chapter 19. These and the remaining 10 Commandments and the many other guidelines introduced by the rabbis and the Pharisees had a tendency to require a legalistic, external obedience to the law, without calling attention to an inner obedience from the heart. Jesus confronts these false interpretations by giving his authoritative pronouncement, and with it, what was meant by God as the right way to live, and shows the human face of God. In this passage, he actually takes almost half of the Ten Commandments to make his point about kingdom living and how to bring some common sense, or maybe we should call it kingdom sense, to the current chaos. It might look a bit radical to the standards of today, but maybe it's something radical, like in the man being pasted, and I've got my little man being pasted, to prove the point over the strength of the paste in that incident. But maybe it's that, something so radical, that's needed today. So let's look at them briefly to see if we can tease out some kingdom sense for living radically different lives today in the 21st century. If we had more time this morning, we would be able to probably spend about an hour or so in greater detail of what Jesus might be saying in these 17 verses. And you may remember that we have actually done a whole series that explored this passage. And I think we did it over probably about two or three sessions, in actual fact. But I wonder whether this kingdom sense can be expressed in four ways. So kingdom sense that nurtures relationships, that commits to marital oneness, that sees the permanence of marriage and lives in transparent honesty. So let's start with a kingdom sense nurtures relationships. Verse 21 restates the sixth commandment, "You shall not murder," and has as its basis the fact that men and women have been created in the image of God. So this is a given, something that's non-negotiable. But there are new, and for us, three helpful insights of behaviours that are not pleasing to God that come in verse 22. These are, firstly, anyone who shows inappropriate anger towards people as a way that can attempt to take a person's identity and value as God's creature away from them. Do you ever find yourself feeling frustrated by having to wait in a queue, that when you get to the head of it, you're a bit tetchy with the person serving you? Or how about the second case of anyone calling a brother or sister raka, an Aramaic term implying empty-headed? Maybe today it would be a bit like using words like brainless, ignorant, or stupid, or any other type of name-calling which strips people of their true identity and replaces it with an offensive one. Along a similar vein, the third insight of calling someone a fool, as in the final part of verse 22, was creating a reference to a person's moral actions, so acting like an idiot. Jesus highlights that all these behaviours result in judgment, having to be answerable to your actions or ending up on the rubbish heap. The antidote to these everyday problems, it says here, reconciliation. And Jesus presents this antidote by telling a parable of someone about to present their gift at the altar and then remembering that something is not quite right between them and a brother and sister. So what do? Do they present their gift and then resolve the matter between the two of them later? No. The complete opposite. Picture the scene. Quite a comical one, really, as for those listening on the hillside in Galilee, it would take them about 3 days to get from the temple back to Galilee, make their reconciliation, and then return to the temple to make their gift. But he then widens the picture in verses 25 to 26 to now include adversaries or enemies, a theme he picks up later in verses 38 to 48 of the same chapter about loving your enemies. Maybe another way of seeing enemies are those who are different to you and I. There are a lot of people who are different to those of us who believe in Jesus and his kingdom. This doesn't mean colluding or turning away from our beliefs as being their friends and working with them. But it does mean becoming their friends, looking for common ground, celebrating and nurturing that. Maybe it's similar to this ad on Amazon, depicting the imam and the parish priest who both had knee problems and both buy each other knee pads to be used during their times of prayer. The point that Jesus is making here is that the kingdom sense on offer by Jesus is about nurturing relationships, maintaining the healthy life of relationships, both with other disciples and with non-disciples. In essence, all humanity. This is how radical this statement was. There is nothing more important than nurturing relationships between you and all your neighbours, as it is this that shows the salt and light of the kingdom of heaven. In life, whether at work or at home, anger might be used to manipulate others, or anger may overwhelm you because you feel that you've been unfairly treated. I'd encourage you to deal with the issue. Take the first step towards reconciliation, even though it might put you in a position of humility. Engaging in fair, open conflict resolution is the way of the new kingdom. And if you'd like to explore this a little bit more, I would really, really commend this book to you. Written by Archbishop Desmond Tutu and his daughter, and it's entitled The Book of Forgiveness. And it's a phenomenal, phenomenal read that perhaps if you're looking for something over Lent, I'd really encourage you to get a copy and work through it because it's really very, very helpful. So in essence then, a kingdom sense nurtures relationships. So let's move on then to a kingdom sense commits to marital oneness. Verses 27 to 30 quotes the seventh commandment, you shall not commit adultery, as well as the tenth concerning coveting another's wife, which stresses the fact that men and women have been created in the image of God. Adultery was considered one of the most serious offences because it broke the relationship that was a reflection between God and his people. Adultery was often used to describe the way the people of Israel went after other gods than Yahweh. So adultery is therefore not only physical, for the physical sexual intercourse, but also mentally engaging in an act of unfaithfulness. Jesus is not advocating as the response to that physical self-mutilation, but rather the kind of rigorous self-discipline that committed disciples will display to indicate the state of our hearts. Life in the kingdom of heaven, living with a kingdom sense, produces disciples who live out human relationships, including marriage, and marriage in the way that God originally designed. So if we are to translate this into today and applying this kingdom sense of committing to marital oneness, this means that not only do we keep away from committing adultery, but are so committed to God's purpose for marriage that we have eyes and hands only for our spouses, keeping every thought, every action to be singly focused on our spouse, giving our souls solely and only to him or her, as this treats him or her with the dignity that he or she deserves, created in the image of God. Anything less would demean them. But to help bring this to life, if you're married, why not consider doing the marriage course? Or if you've done it already, get your course manuals out and revisit the insights that you got from the course. The next course party is on Tuesday the 18th of April, down at St Paul's, with lovely food cooked by my beloved husband, Robin. And perhaps you could contribute to support the marital oneness that Jesus describes by being involved in this invaluable ministry, helping to cook or serve food, or tidying away after dinner. So if any of that interests you, do talk to me afterwards. So kingdom sense radically commits to marital oneness. And related to this is that the kingdom sense sees the permanence of marriage. Why does Jesus talk about this? Well, like today, the essence of the sanctity of marriage was being lost. Here, Jesus is explaining to listeners that divorce is allowed only to protect the non-offending partner and so protect the institution of marriage from being a sham. So But the point of this third statement is therefore to remind all of us to take the marriage covenant so sacredly that it should never be broken except when the most extreme conditions make it impossible to remain married. Now, this can be difficult in the current culture that constantly questions the value of marriage and faithfulness. And Jesus said that we are meant to be a committed team. But I also know that there are sometimes terrible circumstances where it is the right thing to separate or divorce. 3 of my 6 siblings are divorced. 2 of them were in very mentally abusive relationships. And I know that it wasn't an easy option for them to take. In living out this sacredity, we need to be careful not to judge those. Not to judge those who, for whatever reason, chose to divorce and separate. Because one of the things we also need to be clear about is that in this passage, it does not say that anyone who marries a divorced person or remarries themselves are not committing an unpardonable sin. Because all are welcome in the kingdom where they are open to receive grace and restoration. So finally, if we are to live lives that embrace a kingdom sense of living, we are to live in transparent honesty. Jesus starts with a summary of various oath passages, including a deepening of the third commandment about using the Lord's name in vain. The rabbis had developed a highly structured hierarchy of oaths, and Jesus was challenging the listeners to think differently, to think before we speak. Mean what you say, and then follow it through. So, like we were thinking in Reaching Wider, of say it, mean it, do it, in verses 34 to 36, he is in fact saying that extra words, especially strong ones, call into question whether we can be trusted at all. In other words, a simple yes or no should be enough for a trustworthy person. For if we are living with a kingdom sense that is nurturing relationships between you and all your neighbours, then we will be known as trustworthy. And if we're tempted to swear by something to deceive, then that can only have one source, the evil one. So here, Jesus is unveiling a whole new radical way of being human by introducing a kingdom sense to the way of life. So what might this kingdom sense look like for you? Whether you've been following him all your life, or less than that, or someone who's still making up your mind, what might that look like for you to live out your life centred on a kingdom sense that nurtures relationships? A kingdom sense that commits to marital oneness, whether you're married, widowed or single. A kingdom sense that sees the permanence of marriage. Well, what might it look like for you to live out your life centred on the kingdom sense that lives in transparent honesty? What would it look like if you brought this kingdom sense to life in your life and the way that you treat others? I wonder what it would look like if we lived our lives with a kingdom sense as we face the forecasted challenges and the likely unsettling and worrying times ahead in the world and in our nation. It's a tall order. A really tall order. It's a tall order for you and for me. But the other bit of good news is that we're not alone. Jesus has left his Holy Spirit to make us more like him, working deep within our hearts and minds, helping and equipping each of us to be the salt and light that this perplexed world so desperately needs. Living by the standards of the kingdom that welcomes everyone to receive God's grace and restoration. In reaching wider, we had an opportunity to be able to respond by saying that we want to be able to be people that are bringing God's light into the situations that we find ourselves in. And for that, we were thinking particularly about the things that we say, that we mean them, and that we do them. But I wonder whether this is also a way of representing our desire, of you being able to represent your desire to be able to bring God's kingdom sense to our perplexed world. If you weren't here at Reaching Wider and you feel that from what's been said that you want to be able to make that declaration too, then we're going to have a time of silence in a moment. And if you'd like to, there is still some glue here and some people. If you want to come and stick one of those people up on the board as a way of saying, yes, that's my heart's desire to do that, then feel free to do that. So as we sit in silence, let us all focus on maybe the figure that you placed on the board and invite Jesus to inspire our hearts and our minds as to how he would like us to be his light in this world by living with a kingdom sense today, tomorrow, this week, and in our lives ahead.